What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Martian MMA podcast. This week's going to be a solo episode. Ozzy had to get out of town on a moment's notice, so he's not going to be able to record this week, but I'm still going to be here breaking down all 13 fights for you from a betting perspective, talking about which bets I like the best. And we have 13 fights from the UFC Apex going down this weekend, headlined by Amanda Ribas versus Rose Namajunas, a women's flyweight main event. And throughout the rest of the card, honestly, I think this is a pretty decent Apex fight night card. I mean, for some reason, the main event, co-main event, is Carl Williams versus Justin Taffa, which is a horrible fight. But besides that, honestly, I think looking top to bottom, there's a lot of good fights. And looking at the odds, I mean, I think the biggest favorite on this entire card is minus 210 right now. We have two minus 210 favorites, but top to bottom, 13 competitive lines where all the fights are under 70% for the favorites. So that's going to lead to a lot of competitive betting lines, some good fights here. And I definitely have a good amount of bets I like throughout the card that I will be talking about. In terms of last week, pretty forgettable card last week. Tabura got it done in the main event in pretty easy fashion. There was actually a lot of dogs that came through last week. A lot of dogs. OSP was a huge dog, 5-1 dog cash in there. Christian Rodriguez underdog, Chelsea Chandler, Danny Silva, Amarine, Chad and Heiliger. So six dogs on the card. The main event, co-main event with Ange Lusa, I got a real lucky refund on the Ange Lusa bet there. Terrible bet that I was lucky to get a refund on. Had some decent shouts throughout. Macy Chiasson's submission was a good one that I had, but it was also, of course, wrong on several bets as well. Moises submission, Philo GTD, Danny Silva ITD, and then Grigoro moneyline was horrible to start off the card. So I would say it was a decent or actually below average week for me. I believe Ozzy did pretty well with his bets last week. And you know, just always stay looking out for those live lines, man. I think, honestly, I'm shifting my approach to betting more and more live lines instead of pre-fight. And that's just the way to play a lot of these fights is see it play out, watch how the fighters are looking, and then take the live line for often a better price than before the fight. So enough about that. We're going to get into these fights. 13 fights. For some reason, Tapology said 14 for a second there, but no, 13 fights. We're starting things off in the main event. Women's flyweight division, Ribas versus Namajunas. Rose is minus 210 right now. Ribas plus 180. Two-way action on this line this week. We saw a lot of action come in on Rose in the middle of the week. She actually got to minus 300 on BetOnline for a second there before the Ribas action came back in. And I believe that the Ribas is the side in this fight, man. I think that I line it a little closer to maybe 60% for Rose Namajunas here. I mean, she's obviously much more experienced, championship caliber fighter, been to five rounds a lot more. I believe this is Ribas' first time going the full five rounds. So Rose has a huge advantage when it comes to five-round fights. But, I mean, if you look at Rose's past two fights, the Esparza fight, one of the worst fights in history. I mean, just a total staring match the entire time. One of the weirdest fights you'll ever see. And then the Fiorot fight, she moved up to 125. She flew into France. She did break her finger, allegedly, in the first, you know, minute of the fight. That really threw off her rhythm there. I think she fought okay there. But, I mean, I rewatched that fight today, man, and I didn't see either woman landing a hard strike the entire fight. I mean, it was a total spar. It was a boring fight. And I don't think Rose Namajunas looked very, you know, emphatic there at all. And that's basically her past two fights, her past 40 minutes in the cage, I thought were pretty lackadaisical for Rose Namajunas. I mean, even the Zhang rematch back in 2021, she did pull away big time in the fourth and fifth round with her grappling there. But I didn't think she was looking particularly great in the striking. You know, back in 2018, 19, she was looking really, really sharp on the feet in the Joanna wins, the Andrade fights. But I think that she's been looking worse and worse in the striking lately. Trevor Whitman is no longer her coach. So, I mean, Pat Barry is her main coach. You got an obese sexual predator as your coach. That's a pretty bad base for MMA, in my opinion. I just think that Ribas, you know, the later this fight goes, I mean, I think her chances probably get better, man. I think that Ribas's cardio and output is a major, major advantage in this fight. She is just much more urgent. You saw her have a slow start versus Pinheiro in her last fight, and then she just got on the gas and started, you know, breaking her down in the second and third round there. I think that Ribas's takedown defense is not great either, but I don't think Rose wrestles enough for it to be a real threat here. I mean, I think Rose probably will mix in some takedowns and do some good work from top position, but I think Ribas will get up, and I think this all comes down to output, man. It's going to be likely, very, very likely, a five-round decision. You know, the fight is favored to go the full five rounds, and actually, it's not. Excuse me. The fight is actually plus 135 to go the full five rounds. I think that's a good look to play the overs and the fight goes in this fight because I do see it going the full five rounds. I see it being competitive, and I think that you're pretty good going with the woman who's going to throw more strikes and be more aggressive in a five-round fight. So I have Ribas at the plus 220 number for about a unit. And I think she will start slow here. She does typically tend to get outstruck in the first round or two of the fights. And then I think she's going to really kick it in a second gear. And she will eventually pull away with a 3-2 decision here. And, you know, my theory on main events, when women or when fighters are scheduled for their first main event, it very, very often goes that full five rounds. So pretty surprised to see the fight is favored to end inside the distance. I think playing this fight to go over 4.5, go the distance, and Ribas are the angles I'm looking for here. Next fight, heavyweight division, Carl Williams, Justin Taffa. Odds for this one, Carl minus 190, Taffa plus 165. Easy betting angle for me here. I am on Carl Williams. I got in at minus 172. Look, it's heavyweight. It's juice. It's not something I like to go to too often. But Carl Williams is a pretty reliable wrestler. And Justin Taffa is a horrible grappler. You know, we haven't seen it in the UFC. This guy has miraculously not been taken down in the UFC. But if you watch his fights before the UFC, he is a bum on the ground, just like a lot of these guys are, man. Just like his brother is, just like Tai Tuivasa is, like we just saw, just like Tyson Pedro is. These, you know, Australian Samoan guys are not trained in their grappling, man. They are just sparring and boxing, and they clearly do not do much, if any, jiu-jitsu and wrestling. And I think that if Carl Williams takes the easiest path here and hits these takedowns, man, this should be a real, real easy victory for Carl here. And even Justin Taffa on the feet. I mean, Jared Vandera outstruck this guy, right? It was a 15-minute striking fight, and Jared Vandera outstruck Justin Taffa. So people think Taffa is great because he knocked out some guys like fucking Harry Hunsucker and Juan Adams, and who was that bum, the football player he just knocked out too? Austin Lane. I think he's coming, Parker Porter. I mean, he's coming off of three knockouts in a row in the first round, so I think people are kind of forgetting. But yeah, lost a decision to Carlos Felipe too. I mean, Taffa is not a good striker if he doesn't knock you out in the first round. So hopefully Carl Williams hits some takedowns, makes it real easy here. And I think that, you know, one takedown should be Carl keeping top position, keeping Taffa down, and then Taffa's cardio and his power is going to be extremely diminished by the second round. So easy bet for me on Carl Williams here. Moving on to the premier division next, Edmund Shahbazyan, AJ Dobson. Odds for this one, Shahbazyan minus 200, AJ Dobson plus 170. I mean, Edmund's never a guy I'm looking to lay juice on. I mean, this guy's a clear gasser. I mean, almost every time he's been in the third round, he's gotten destroyed or finished or 10-8'd. I mean, this guy just clearly cannot fight for the full 15 minutes. Maybe he's been working on it. Maybe he shows improvements in this fight. But when I see a minus 200 price tag, I would want to be damn sure that they can fight the full 15 minutes. And that's not the case. So Edmund, money line is out of the question. AJ Dobson did look improved in his last fight against Tafan Chukwi. He fought a more measured, steady pace and was able to hit some key takedowns in that fight. You know, outstrike Tafan on the feet while it was there, although it was close. The first two rounds were close when it was on the feet, but AJ's takedowns really made the difference there. You got to think also, AJ Dobson has the power of Mark Coleman, fighting spirit with him in the corner for this one, which will be a good factor for him. But I don't know, man. That fight versus Tafan was just fought at a very, very slow pace. And Edmund gasses out versus guys who push at pace, who push a wrestling pace. And, you know, I think that AJ's best chance here is probably to get outstruck in the first round, let Edmund use some energy, and then AJ goes to those takedowns in the second and third round. I think that's his best chance at winning, because when they're fresh, I think Edmund is much sharper, quicker, the better striker, and AJ doesn't really push a pace on the feet that'll make Edmund gas. So I think AJ will be durable enough to withstand Edmund's strikes, and I think Edmund he's got to be aware that he slows down, man, and I think he's going to be, you know, taking some of the power off his strikes, taking some of the intensity down. And I think we're probably going to see Edmund outstrike AJ for the first two rounds and then probably concede round three, maybe lose that round and probably win a 29-28 decision here for Edmund. The bets on this fight I like are the fight to start the third round, minus 118 on FanDuel, and Edmund decision plus 310 on FanDuel as well. Because of what I just mentioned, I think that Edmund will be taking some of the intensity off his pace. He'll outstrike AJ for the first couple of rounds. And, you know, AJ, I think having success, I don't think he's going to knock Edmund out, man. I know he knocked out that extremely old bum on the Contender Series. But when we saw AJ in his last fight, he was not really putting power behind his shots. He was very measured. It was a very medium tempo striking fight. And I don't think that's going to make Edmund gas. And I think he'll probably drop a decision here to Edmund. Not an extremely passionate take on that fight for me, you know, just about a unit across the starts round three and the decision prop for Edmund there. And I will be moving on to the next fight here, where we have in the bantamweight division, Peyton Talbot, Cameron Simon. Odds for this one, minus 140, Talbot plus 120, Simon. Good fight here between two young up-and-coming prospects. I think both these guys have some flaws, and it's interesting to see them being matched up so quickly. I think this is a little bit of a mistake for this matchup because, one, you're jumping Peyton Talbot from Nick Aguirre to Simon, which is a little bit too big of a jump. And then Simon's coming off his first loss of his career against a good fighter in Christian Rodriguez, and then they're giving him another good prospect in Peyton Talbot here. So kind of questionable matchmaking for this one. Nonetheless, it'll be a good fight. Peyton Talbot is a pretty slow starter. This guy drops round one pretty consistently, and I don't think Talbot's a good grappler, man. I think that his wrestling and his defensive get-ups leave a lot to be desired. Now, Simon isn't a great offensive wrestler, but I think he can potentially exploit that in short bursts here by hitting some takedowns. Talbot's cardio is really good. He typically wins his fights by starting slow, letting his opponents have some success, and then he builds into the fight well and takes over late with his cardio and his output. But Simon also has really good cardio and also has a little bit of the same style where he tends to take over the longer the fight goes. I think that Simon is the best striker that Talbot has fought so far. Talbot's defense, his footwork, I really don't love what I'm seeing. I mean, his offensive technique is solid when he's just throwing out offense, and his volume is good, but I don't think his footwork or his defense is very sound, and I think Simon could potentially exploit that. So I think this fight being a pick'em, or maybe even Simon slightly favored, is the way I'm seeing the fight. I don't think you could put Talbot as the favorite when he, one, hasn't fought very good competition, two, typically loses the first round of the fight, and three, I think he has defensive wrestling and defensive striking flaws that could be exploited here by Cameron Simon. So I'm leaning with Simon in this one. I think the money line play is probably going to be Simon for one unit. I also think this one's very likely to go the distance. The odds have it at only minus 165 to go the distance. I think it's a little bit more favored than that. They're both young. I mean, young guys, man, can take damage. I think that these guys are going to be hitting each other on the feet. I don't see either guy being hurt by strikes in the feet. And Simon has more grappling upside, but I don't think he'll convert a finish. Talbot only has one submission on his record. I think this one is pretty safe to go the distance. I would cap it closer to, you know, minus 235 to go the distance, 70% there. So there's some value on goes the distance, and I also think Simon is the side here in the money line. The next fight is in the bantamweight division. Billy Quarantillo taking on Yusef Zalal. A little bit of a short notice fight here for Zalal. Odds for this one, bet online. Billy Quarantillo minus 136. Yusef Zalal plus 116. When this fight was first announced and I saw the line, I was thinking this would be a play on Billy Q, but I think I'm going to be staying away for it for now, because I just remembered that Billy Q, he always loses round one. I mean, this guy's a habitual round one loser. Kyle Nelson took round one. Damon Jackson. What's homeboy? Gavin Tucker won all the rounds off of him. Billy Q just consistently starts slow. Alex Hernandez beat him up in the first round. His whole style is kind of similar to what I was just talking about with Talbot, but even more extreme. This guy lets you tee off on him in the first round, and then he comes back in the second and third round and puts a pace on you. So with him being a slow starter, I see no reason to take him before the fight. Especially because you think that Zalal taking the fight on short notice will likely slow as the fight goes on. So I just think you're better off waiting or getting in on Billy Q live here. And you always got to be interested with the Billy Q round two, round three props. Those are, pretty good throughout his career. Oh, wow. The line just moved to -124 on BetOnline that I'm seeing now for Billy Q. Man, that's interesting, man. I mean, this line continues to come in on Zalal, and I don't know, man. Even though I was just saying I'm passing on Billy Q before the fight, I think Billy Q under 55% is fairly generous here. I know the guy is getting older. He's 35. He has a style that's really not going to age well. But I don't know, man. I think he's very likely to break Zalal with his volume and pressure in the second and third round here. And Billy Q round two, wow, +900, 1200 on some books, 1800 for round three on Billy Q. I think Billy Q round two, round three knockout has got to be worth a stab here. I mean, I'm seeing 16 and 18 to 1 on BetOnline. Those prices will be even better on FanDuel. Let me pull up FanDuel right now and see if they have those odds out. Because Billy Q has won several fights that way. I mean, he has great, great cardio. He always comes in prepared. And even though I said that he has bad defense, he does get lit up in the first round. Yusef Zalal doesn't have power, man. I mean, he's not going to be knocking Billy Q out in the first round here. So it's almost like Billy Q lulls his opponents into hitting them in his face. And he's like, come on, go ahead and hit me in the head. And they think they're winning, and then they end up, gassing themselves out and losing the second half of the fight. Yeah, Billy Q round two KO on FanDuel +1900, KO round three +2800. Those are huge fucking numbers, man. I'm going to be shipping those bets for sure. And those are the bets I recommend most before the fight. And Billy Q money line before the fight might be looking like a play at this point, because the line just keeps coming in and I might be forced to play him at this number. Good fight there on short notice. Nice to see Zalal back in the UFC. And we're moving on to a Hispanic striking showdown here in the featherweight division. Fernando Padilla taking on Luis Puelo. Odds for this one have Padilla -164, Puelo +144. So I watched a lot of footage on these guys. I watched a lot of fights throughout all of these fights this week. Did a lot of tape study. But I think this one I might have looked into the most, because Puelo, this is his UFC debut. He's coming off a knockout in the first round on the Contender Series. Padilla, pretty questionable performance in his last fight versus Kyle Nelson. Just didn't really look too good there, and was just outmatched by Kyle Nelson there, to be honest. And for this one, the money line, I don't know, man. I think I would go with dog or pass for Puelo, because we just saw Padilla get a striking fight versus Kyle Nelson, and he just left a lot to be desired there. I mean, his volume wasn't good. He never really upped the intensity. He was probably down heading into that third round. You just never saw him kick it into that next gear. So I have some questions about what happens when Padilla just can't knock somebody out in round one like he did a Rosa. I think he will struggle with, more skilled strikers. Now, Puelo is pretty much purely an offensive striker. I mean, his defensive grappling, man, is fucking horrible. I don't think it's going to come into factor here versus Padilla, who isn't known for hitting takedowns. But Puelo, man, is seriously totally clueless in terms of all wrestling, grappling, clinching, getting back to his feet. I mean, you're almost kind of hoping Puelo wins this fight just so he fights a grappler next and we can, steam the line on the grappler, because, man, Puelo is horrible on the mat. But on the feet, man, this guy pumps out a lot of volume. He digs to the body. I did see him get calf kicked a lot. I do think that that's a weakness that Padilla could potentially exploit. But I just think these guys are going to light each other up for the most part, man. I mean, Poelo loves getting in brawls. I don't think he's a great finisher. I saw several fights of his where he had the guy hurt and the guy was gassed out and he was tiring, and Poelo really couldn't easily find a finish. So I don't think he has that like potent one-shot power. I do think Padilla is the more powerful of the two. But Poelo is totally down to brawl. He's down to getting wild striking fights. And I think he's going to be the side here, plus 144. Unsure if I will lock in a bet on him at this point. But I do think that the line is wide. I think Padilla closer to maybe minus 130 would be accurate. This will be a good one, though, man. First fight on the main card, I think it is. Yeah, good placement, because I think these guys are going to bang it out. And it'll be a fun fight. Official prediction in this one, I'll go Poelo decision. I think the fight going the distance is actually, plus 150. That's an interesting angle, too, because I do think these guys are both going to be tough enough to absorb each other's shots, and it will be a high-paced back-and-forth fight, but I think it will inevitably stretch the full distance. Poelo decision at 4-1 as well is interesting. I mean, they have, let's see, Padilla decision is much more likely according to the odds, but we just saw Padilla drop a decision to Kyle Nelson in a very ideal fight for him. So I don't know why the odds would be so wide on Poelo winning a decision when I think he is the more active and aggressive striker of the two. So moving on to the prelims here, Trey Ogden, Kurt Hollebach. Odds for this one have Ogden minus 155, Hollebach plus 135. I think this money line is about right, because Trey Ogden, to me, has the much more grappling upside of the two. I think he's much more likely to hit takedowns, and Hollebach's takedown defense has never been great, and we saw Austin Hubbard hit a few takedowns and have some success on top. And I think Trey approaches fights pretty intelligently. I mean, he is a former James Krause student, so you know he's doing that tape study, you know he's looking into his opponents. And I think he will probably come in with a good game plan here to hit these takedowns. And I think that Kurt is the superior boxer of the two. So I think Ogden's going to be spending a lot of time trying to avoid the pocket, you know, stay on the outside while it's on the feet, and then look to time his takedowns and hit those takedowns. And I think the small cage is an advantage for Ogden here. But definitely not interested in laying juice on Ogden. I mean, we can't forget that this guy somehow dropped a decision to Jordan Levitt in a very questionable fight. The performance against Zellhuber was good, and then he fought a similar matchup in Bahamendez and fought terribly there. I mean, he shot one takedown against Bahamendez, even though he was getting outstruck on the feet the entire time. I didn't think that was very good. So, I mean, I'm leaning Ogden in terms of a prediction because of the grappling, but this guy is not a really reliable wrestler to the point where I'm looking to lay juice. So the bet I have in this fight is the fight to go over 2.5 rounds. I mean, it's gotten bet a little bit since I got it at minus 130. It's now minus 155. But I think the most likely finish here is by far Kurt Hollebach to get a knockout. He is favored on the no scorecards. But Ogden just doesn't seem like much of a finisher. He's definitely not going to finish Kurt on the feet. Ogden does not throw hard strikes at all. He might be able to submit Hollebach on the ground if he can keep him there for long enough, but I'm not super impressed with Ogden's submission abilities. So, you know, there's a slight possibility of Hollebach KO, slight possibility of Ogden's submission, but I think they're both getting a little overvalued here. And I think also Kurt sub is getting overvalued considering he's coming off a triangle. Plus 400 for Hollebach sub. That's a shit line, in my opinion. So I believe it will be an Ogden 29-28 by mixing in some takedowns. And I like the over at minus 130, minus 155. Not as much, but I would be looking to play the fight to go long. Next fight is in the featherweight division. A lot of featherweight fights, a few bantamweights, a few lightweights as well, but mostly lower weight classes on this card, so that's good to see. We have Ricardo Ramos taking on Julian Arosa, minus 148 for Ramos, plus 128 for Arosa. And man, I'm still pissed off at Ramos for fucking up that last fight against Jourdain. I mean, just a pathetic, pathetic performance from him there. The fact that he got guillotined like that was just so terrible and makes me really question where Ramos is at. I think this guy, he's only 28 years old, but I think he might be getting worse. I mean, seriously, he was much more active back in, you know, 2017, 18, 19, and I think he's been fighting less and less often, and he's been looking more and more worrisome, honestly. So not really too inspired by Ramos. But Julian Arosa, also a guy you can't really be inspired about because this guy gets knocked out all the fucking time. I was looking through his record, and he has been knocked out once per year for 7 of the last 8 years. And I think 2020 that he didn't get knocked out. But every year, 23, 21, 22, 21, 19, 18, 17, 16, 15, he's been knocked out once a year. So, I mean, that's probably not a good strategy for, you know, your long-term health and durability. And not only does the guy get knocked out, I mean, he just fights in a very goofy way. And Rose is the type of fighter where I don't see why you would bet him before the fight. I mean, wait a few minutes, make sure that he's, you know, still conscious. And he has one of those chins where it seems like he needs to get hit a few times before he really wakes up and he's safe. But those first few shots that hit his chin, he is in grave danger of being knocked out. Ricardo Ramos doesn't throw hard punches at all. You know, he has a few spinning elbow knockouts. But I was thinking, just a few fights ago, we were thinking, hey, Alex Caceres, he doesn't punch hard at all. This is probably a good matchup for Julian Arosa, you know? I mean, Bruce Leroy never knocks anybody out. What do you know? Head kick knockout round one for Bruce Leroy there. So, Arosa's fun. He has a lot of fun, wild fights. But I'm not interested in betting him before the fight here. Wait to see how he's doing. And then look to live bet him. But the one thing I will say about Arosa is he does pretty well against grapplers. His style kind of thrives against grapplers because he's hard to control, he's hard to submit, and then when he escapes those takedowns, he just attacks you. He goes at you with the volume. He's a very good clinch striker, and I don't know, man. I think that Arosa has a good chance in this fight, honestly. Even though I'm kind of, you know, shitting on him a little bit, I think that he has a good chance to pull away in these later rounds and make it a scrap. And I don't know, man. I think Arosa might pull this one off. But again, look to live bet. Wait to make sure he's conscious after 3 to 5 minutes and then live bet him. Also, you're going to see how Ramos is looking because, I mean, like I said, I have questions about this guy. Even though he's only 28, I think he's looking pretty worrisome lately. So, next fight, bantamweight division, Miles Johns, Cody Gibson. Good one here. Miles Johns is the favorite, minus 141. Cody Gibson plus 121. Some action coming in on Gibson today. And rightfully so, man. I have Cody Gibson in this fight. And it all comes down to output. You know, I think this will be predominantly a striking fight. I think if any guy is mixing in takedowns, it will be Miles Johns. But I'm not overly impressed with Miles Johns' takedown defense. And I just think it comes down to output. I mean, these guys are going to strike with each other. And I think we can rely on Cody Gibson to throw much, much more strikes. Because look at Miles Johns' fights that have gone the distance. Dan Argueta, he landed 43 significant strikes. Vince Morales, 38 significant strikes. He had better volume versus Anderson Dos Santos, who was a one-legged fighter in that one. Kevin Natividad, 48 strikes through 13 minutes there. Cole Smith back in the day, 31 strikes over 15 minutes. This guy just doesn't throw a whole lot. You know, he's kind of, he kind of relies on his power shots. Very different striking styles between these two, where Cody Gibson marches forward, throws a million strikes. He's not concerned about power. He's concerned about, you know, overwhelming you with volume. While Miles Johns is much more selective with his punches, he's looking to conserve energy, wind up with a big shot, and try to land and get some respect. So, Cody Gibson does walk forward pretty recklessly at times, leaving his chin open, and he could get clocked here by Johns, but I think he has pretty good recoverability as well. And, you know, Miles Johns, the guy he's knocked out, like I mentioned, Natividad was actually a pretty nice knockout. The Anderson Dos Santos one, Dos Santos was a one-legged fighter for 10 minutes and totally outmatched there. So I'm not too impressed with Johns' power, and I think this one should hit the scorecards, and it should be Cody Gibson ahead at that point because he throws more strikes. One concerning thing for this fight, though, Miles Johns' record in decisions, 7-0. He has had a few close ones. The Vince Morales fight, the Cole Smith fight, Adrian Yanez back in the day, all close fights. But actually, I think it's 8-0 because he technically has that win over Argueta that's a no contest now, which I don't even know why. John's tested positive or something? I don't know. Well, how the hell, how could he test positive and then be back 6 months later? So I don't even know about that one. I think that's a topology mistake. Maybe, I think Argueta was the one who popped there. So that wouldn't be an overturned win for Johns because he didn't pop. So who knows? But yeah, Gibson decision is my pick there. Next fight is, I think, one of my least interesting fights in the card. Steve Nguyen, Jarno Ahrens. Odds for this one have Nguyen as the favorite, minus 164, Ahrens plus 144. And, you know, pretty low-level guys here. Ahrens is 0-2 in the UFC, Nguyen making his debut, coming off of target practice on AJ Cunningham on the Contender Series. And I think this will be a striking fight. I think these guys are going to bang for the most part. And the odds aren't out yet for it, but I would be looking to play this one ends knockout because I just think that they're going to strike with each other, man. And Ahrens had that, you know, nice uppercut knockdown versus Choi in his last fight. Nguyen definitely prefers to box in most of his fights. And I just don't see, I guess Ahrens is maybe a little more likely to try to offensive grapple here, but I don't think it's super likely. I think that this one will be contested on the feet. And it will just be, you know, a high intensity back and forth striking fight where either guy could hurt each other. So, like I said, the odds aren't out for it yet, but I would be looking to play it ends KO. The fight to end inside the distance is plus 120. So you'd probably be looking to get KO, ends KO at, you know, plus 200 or better, hopefully. So I'll be looking at that one, but, you know, can't really give a full assessment of the fight because the odds for the props aren't out on that one, but, I guess the money line's about right, you know. Next one, women's fight in the bantamweight division, Monstrat Rendon taking on Daria Zelenikova. We're going with, that's how you say it, Zelenikova, and the odds for this one have Daria favored minus 210, Rendon plus 180. So both these women are predominantly boxers, right? Daria more so of the two. Daria really doesn't do anything besides box. And she's 8-1. The one fight she had that she lost, she fought Melissa Dixon, who's in the UFC. Melissa was getting lit up for a few minutes, took her down, and then destroyed Daria on the mat. Destroyed her, you know, passed her guard, smashed her with ground and pound, finished her, kind of a quick stoppage, but, I mean, destroyed her. So, that's the only time, in my opinion, if I recall correctly, that she's been on bottom, Daria, and it's a women's fighter making her UFC debut at minus 200 who we know is not a good grappler. Why the fuck would you ever consider betting Daria in this spot? The only way you could consider betting it is Rendon. Now, Rendon is not a reliable wrestler. She definitely doesn't have good wrestling, or she hasn't gone to it in a lot of her fights, but she has mixed it in at times. You know, the Tamaris Vidal fight, she was able to catch a few kicks and turn them into takedowns and keep top position, and that really, really helps her win the fight. Some of her other fights, she tends to clinch and attempt a clinch takedown from the upper body lock, so it's not like she's a reliable wrestler, but she has obviously used wrestling and takedowns in some of her fights in the past. So I think taking a stab on Rendon here is fine. I'm not going to be doing it personally, but plus 180 for like a half unit bet wouldn't knock it at all, man. I mean, one takedown for her and she's likely going to be a huge favorite in the live lines because I just think Daria, she's a total boxing Russian woman who looks like a bad grappler, and I just think this fight's going to go real, real south for her if Rendon starts clinching and hits a takedown. So Rendon would be the side for me in that one. Next fight is a good one between two UFC debutants here, Igor Severino. You'll hear people call him Da Silva as well in some of his fights, clocking in at 20 years old. He's turning 21 next month, taking on Andre Lima, coming off a Contender Series win. So I have Severino in this fight. I am impressed by this guy. He's a shoot-the-box guy. He's a little bit of a spaz, you know, like these shoot-the-box guys tend to be. But I just think he's got way more ways to win the fight, and especially in the grappling, man. Andre Lima, I don't think his grappling is very good. We haven't seen it tested a whole lot. And the one fight versus Igor Talon, he gets taken down and controlled. He gets his back taken in that one. And Andre Lima has also only been, he hasn't really fought pro in MMA for very long. He comes from a kickboxing background. He went pro in MMA in late 2022, so he's been pro for less than 2.5 years. A lot of his wins in the regionals are a promotion called Spartacus MMA, which you could just tell by the sound of it is a bum promotion, and he fought a lot of bad guys over there. You know, Igor obviously hasn't been pro for very long as well, even though his first fight was, you know, when he was fucking 15 years old, allegedly, but he's obviously way younger, and that's why he has way less pro experience. But he actually has the more pro experience, but way less pro. I don't even know what the fuck I'm trying to say. Anyway, he's fought in Jungle Fight, which is a much more reputable promotion down in the Brazilian regionals, 4-0 in there. And I just think it really comes down to the grappling aspect, man. I mean, I've seen Severino go for a lot of submissions. He has, let me see if he has submissions on his record. Yeah, 4 submissions on his record. I've seen him hit a Darce choke once. And I actually saw Lima, I believe he got put in a Darce choke by that fella I was talking about earlier. Talon, I believe, had him in a Darce choke. And he also had his back in that fight. So I just think if Severino mixes the martial arts and looks for some takedowns, you know, looks for an opportunistic position at times, I think he's going to be the side here, man. Even on the feet, I know Lima comes from that kickboxing background, but I'm not overly impressed with what I've seen from him so far. So I like Severino moneyline and Severino by submission. Like I said, he'll also be called Da Silva on some books. He is my side here. He's only 20 years old. He's a shoot-the-box fighter, so you know he's going to have fucking crazy durability. His cardio is insane. I mean, in his contender series fight versus Silva, he hurt Silva, was close to finishing him, was, you know, wailing on him with 50, 60, 70 strikes. And you know, how many times have we seen that where guys do that and then they're totally gassed out and, like, the fight goes the other way? This guy didn't slow down one bit. He had a near finish. He expended all that energy. And 1 minute later, he did the same shit over again, hurt him, and then actually found the finish that time. So I was more impressed on the footage by Severino. I'm not sure why this line is this wide. I haven't really heard people talking about Lima much. But to me, this line makes no sense. Igor is younger. He's more experienced. He has a more reputable regional record. He trains at a better gym. He has the more grappling upside. He has more ways to win the fight. And yeah, I mean, pretty easy play on Igor for me. That's going to take us to the last fight on the card in the heavyweight division. We're starting things off, well, it's actually the first fight on the card, with Muhammad Usman versus Mick Parkin. Odds for this one, minus 146 for Parkin, Usman plus 126. Confusing line on this one for me, because originally, before I did tape on this one, I was thinking, oh, you know, Parkin will probably win. After doing some footage, I think the opposite. I think this is Usman's fight. And Parkin is fucking confusing, man. First of all, this guy's only had 2 fights in the UFC. One of them, he fought Jamal Pogues and looked really good. You know, he was measured. He was fighting behind a jab. He was fighting behind leg kicks. Pogues, you know, looked really bad there. He looked disinterested. So it was a pretty easy fight. And then versus Kyle Machado, I think Parkin looked, you know, much worse. I mean, his striking was so much sloppier. He really relied on getting takedowns in that fight. And luckily for him, Machado was a really bad wrestler and was really bad once he got stuck on bottom as well. And I think that actually in this fight, Muhammad Usman is the better wrestler. And one thing I also noted about these guys is when they get takedowns, neither of them does a whole lot on top. It's not like these guys are looking to pass guard and land ground and pound and go for submissions. No, they're mostly looking to stall once they get that top position. And on the feet as well, Parkin doesn't really throw power behind many of his strikes. As I mentioned earlier, he's mostly a jab and a leg kick kind of fighter. And Usman also fights behind a jab, has definitely more power of the two. We saw that in the Pauga fight, you know, was losing that fight. And then one little left hook just put Pauga out. So I think striking wise, it'll be close. It'll be the leg kick of Parkin. It'll be the two guys jabbing with each other. And I think the wrestling advantage slightly goes to Usman here. I actually think this fight going the distance is the best bet on the fight. I think it should be closer to pick 'em in the live line or the money line. So I do have Usman as my money line side here. But I just think this fight going the distance around 56-57%, I think that is generous because of multiple things I mentioned. If there's takedowns, I don't think there's a huge threat of a finish here. When it's on the feet, I don't think Parkin will be finishing. I guess maybe a leg kick oriented finish of some sort would be his best chance. And Usman has one punch power, but doesn't really, you know, sit down on his shots a whole lot. A bet I took earlier for this one is Muhammad Usman no scorecards. Currently pick 'em on Bet Online. I'm sure it'll drop on FanDuel and DraftKings at even better price. But I like that as well because I think if anyone's finishing here, I think it's, you know, 7 out of 10 times going to be Usman with some sort of knockout on the feet. So I like that one to go the distance. I'm unsure if I'll get around to a bet on Usman money line. Because if the Parkin, the fought Jamal Pogue shows up, it's probably going to be bad for Usman. He's probably going to get his leg kicked. He's probably going to get jabbed. But if the Parkin who fought Machado shows up, I mean, I'm thinking that's going to be a pretty good performance from Usman. And Usman will get the win. So I'll officially predict Usman by decision as the official pick. But yeah, I'm leaning with mostly dogs this week, guys. I mean, that's typical in general of me. I've been more selective with dogs in the past several months. Carl Williams is the favorite I like the best in this one. I am going to be betting for sure on Cody Gibson and Igor Da Silva. Debating a play on Muhammad Usman, Luis Puello. Debating a play on favorite Billy Quarantillo as well, but I really like Billy Quarantillo's late knockout props there, like the over in the Ogden in the Hollebach fight. Looking to live bet Juicy J, Julian Arosa, looking to bet the ends KO in the Steve Nguyen and Jarno Ahrens fight. And I think the Rebos is the side in the main event as well. I have a bet on her at plus 220. So, also, last but not least, the overs, the starts round three, and the Edmund decision in the Edmund Shabazian fight. So, a lot of good fights, man. I mean, the Apex events suck, right? But I actually think this card has pretty solid matchups on it. And they're all evenly matched. Like I was saying, the odds are all very competitive. So I think this is a pretty good Apex card. One of the better ones we've had in this stretch. I think better than the next couple we had. This card might be better than the fucking Atlantic City card next week in front of an audience. So that's going to do it for me on this one. Hope you all enjoyed the podcast. Hope you're all able to get some good information. Hopefully Ozzy will be back with us next week. And I will see you all next week. Hope you all enjoy the fights, win some bets, and we will see you all before the next UFC event. Peace out.